Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Arkansas Children's Podcast. We are here with Marcy Doderer, President and CEO of Arkansas Children's. She's celebrating 10 years here at Arkansas Children's. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kristen. Glad to be here. Excited to share some of my story.
10 years, how does that feel?
Pretty extraordinary. I don't think when I took the job that I certainly didn't have an end date in mind. I didn't stop to really think, if you've been there 10 years, what will that feel like? So now that I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, holy cow, like 10 years, that's a lot. And we've accomplished an amazing amount of work.
Awesome. We're going to call that one a bonus question because we have 10 questions for 10 years. And I didn't mean to ask that one. So we're going to start now. Number one.
That was a practice question.
Practice. That's okay. What sparked your interest in healthcare?
Trying to find a professional path where I could blend heavy business skills, because I was very interested in business and was a finance undergrad, but actually wanted to be in a business that took care of people. Mm-hmm. I thought about healthcare early, but I didn't like science. And so I knew I didn't want to be a caregiver. I didn't want to take that pathway through school, and was really struck when I took an elective in business school called Healthcare as Business, and learned about all that happens in hospitals from a business perspective, and found it fascinating and changed my trajectory and pursued a career in healthcare.
And the rest is history.
30 years later.
Right. So you've held many leadership positions in healthcare. What draws you to pediatrics?
I think it's really the power of walking the hallways of a pediatric hospital and knowing that you are able to influence a life that really needs support by others. Adult healthcare is wonderful, and I spent a long time in adult healthcare, and taking care of adults is very fulfilling when people are sick or injured, and you can be part of a team that helps someone be healed or fixed or sent home in a better way than when they arrived. That's fulfilling on any level, regardless of the age of the patient. But children in our society are somewhat voiceless. They don't vote, and healthcare is really driven by the power of public policy. And so when you're in children's hospitals, there's this different motivation to do right by the child, because maybe no one else will. And you think about a state like Arkansas, 700,000 children, we don't take care of all of them. But we need every single child to reach his or her fullest potential as they grow. And healthcare is a big piece of that. And so it's just that powerful influence you can have on a family by ensuring that a children's hospital is everything they need anytime they need it.
Question two, and I'm already starting to tear up. I'm not sure I can make it all the way through, if we're being honest. So why Arkansas Children's? What brought you here?
At first, it really was the timing. I was in a wonderful job in San Antonio, but was at a point of having spent my career in health systems, that the draw of a freestanding children's hospital where everyone and everything was solely about caring for children was a big draw for me. And so there was a perfect timing in my own career, being ready for something new, being prepared for something new, that this job became available. So timing's everything, right? When you're looking for a new job, you might want something, but if it's not available, it's going to be really hard to be that or do that. The power of Arkansas, though, the draw of Arkansas was pretty exciting, though, because I grew up in Little Rock. My family moved here when I was in third grade for my dad to become the first fellowship-trained pediatric cardiologist in the state. So I went to high school here. I was a volunteer at Arkansas Children's. My first paid job was actually at Arkansas Children's when I was in high school, and then did a summer internship. So it's kind of pretty cool to think that I could possibly come full circle in a career, mm-hmm. having learned about healthcare as a business, learned about healthcare as a powerful place of service to others, and then come back to be its leader. So, you know, I think about timing and career, it's not just about what you've done and how prepared you are. You got to have the luck of what's available when you're ready for it. And everything came together that spring.
I can't let you say your first job was at Arkansas Children's without finding out what you did. So what was that?
So remember, I'm old compared to many people who might be watching this podcast. So there's probably a lot of viewers that don't even know what microfiche is. But way back before the digital age, there was this process of taking paper and converting it to really tiny replications of it on a piece of film called microfiche. and the billing division of the Department of Pediatrics was trying to convert all their paper files to microfiche to reduce the amount of storage they needed. And I came over here every day after school and worked in a small office in a conference on a conference table and took paper and converted it to microfiche until my father, who was also, you know, still was a physician here, whenever he was ready to go home, he'd stop by the office, knock on the door and say, I can take you home now. My brother brought me here. My dad took me home 3 or 4 hours a night.
I love it. And now we're uploading everything to the cloud.
Right.
Do we have a room full of teenagers doing that somewhere?
We probably would be well served, but they could probably do that digital conversion faster than anyone my age. That's for sure.
Probably. As you reflect on 10 years at Arkansas Children's, what are the accomplishments that you're most proud of?
How many do I get to list?
As many as you're super proud of. I want to hear them all.
Yeah, I've got several that really come to mind as things to be extraordinarily proud of because I witnessed a team accomplish something. There's very little of my personal fingerprint in all the big actions, but I guess I would start first with our safety journey. And as I do employee forums and make rounds, I regularly remind team members that 10 years ago, we had an extraordinary number of serious safety events. We had too many times when we disregarded policy or diverged from policy or practice or evidence and harmed a child in the course of care. And I think one year there were almost 50 serious safety events. We just finished fiscal year 23 with only 3 across our entire health system. And that has been really an incredible culture change where every person comes to work knowing that harm can happen, knowing that I could make a mistake because we're people and we're fallible. And yet, if you are in the moment, if you are situationally aware, if you have a preoccupation with the thought that failure could happen, you can avoid harm almost every time. And we've seen that. So every year, our number of preventable harm events are coming down. Every year, the number of patients seriously harmed in the course of care has gone down. The same is true on our safety journey with employees. So that's probably my most proud moment because that has the most impact for kids. But if you think about growing a health system, which is what we've done in the last 10 years, you know, I'd have to say Arkansas Children's Northwest. 10 years ago, people on our board, people on the team who'd been here a long year said, we've looked at building a hospital in Northwest. It's not possible. It's too expensive. Not enough kids. There were all, you know, a host of reasons why it couldn't be done then. And yet, I could totally envision it. And so we spent a lot of time in 2015 and 2016 convincing and putting forth a plan that was our convincing tool to tell the board we could do this. And here we are 5 years later in a community, having a community hospital of AC&W that's doing things that, you know, some found it hard to envision, but I could always see. And now we're going to put a shovel in the ground and make it bigger.
Do you feel a bit of deja vu starting the building process over?
A little bit, but it's a different team. And I think it'll actually be easier this time. We challenged and really stretched the system, the process of designing and building a hospital to its fullest, because we did what was called a design build process, which meant we had dirt moving, we had steel going in the ground before we had actually fully designed the building. And so a design build means you're doing that at the same time. In management, we talk about that, you know, we're going to build the airplane while we fly it. Well, we literally did that at Arkansas Children's Northwest.
That makes my heart patter a little bit. Sounds
team swore they would never do that again. So it will be a little slower pace than the first time. But we had the pressure to be first to market, and we were.
You're going to design the airplane first this time.
We are designing the airplane first before any shovel turns dirt.
Good. That makes me feel. And was that a chaotic time in your life?
It was very chaotic because I was very hands-on in that process while still operating, you know, a 336-bed hospital down the street. So we were, and AC&W wasn't the only thing we were building. We were trying to figure out how to get deeper into the state. So we were planning for and envisioning Southwest Little Rock. We were trying to figure out how to make Jonesboro different than it was. We knew we'd have to move the Lowell Clinic into the hospital after we built the hospital. We were being really pushed to do something in South Arkansas, and that eventually came out as a Pine Bluff Clinic and a mobile dental clinic in El Dorado. So there were we couldn't just stop and build a hospital. We actually still had a hospital to run and an entire state to still figure out.
That's an insight that I did not know about the building process of Northwest. So that's one I'm going to remember. Okay. So you've made an incredible impact on the people at Arkansas Children's. Me, I will tell you a personal story. You've made an impact on me. When I first started, the first time I met you, I was a little scared.
Were you dressed as Elsa the first time
we met? You were dressed as a mouse the first time we met. And I kind of credit that to my loosening up a little bit and leaning into the pediatric side of my job and the kids. And so you've made an impact on me. And today's my 2-year anniversary.
Congratulations. So glad you're here. Two years.
You
only have 8 more to go to reach me.
I know. And the first time I met you as a mouse, you changed my trajectory. So what would you say to young leaders or people coming up in this type of world? What advice would you give to people starting a similar journey?
Don't wear a mouse costume on your first day of work.
Do start there.
Not your first
day. Not the first day.
But be willing to wear a mouse costume if it fits the time. I think some of the best advice I received that I continue to pass along when I have an opportunity to mentor people, early careerists and people interested in healthcare, is keep your mind open to the opportunity to do a variety of things. Never be so fixated on your path that you don't actually have space in your brain to welcome other opportunities. So, example, I knew I wanted to be in a pediatric healthcare environment from the day I went to graduate school. I didn't start there. I started in adult healthcare, a very large urban academic hospital in the Dallas area. Was eventually over the pediatric program, the women's and children's program there. And I was thinking, this is my path. I'm in women's and children's. I'll be able to get narrower to children's. I was reaching out to pediatric people. But I had an opportunity to be invited to go to rural Texas and help lead a 100-bed hospital in Paris, Texas. And that was not in my plan. That was not my path. But I can tell you, in the 3 years we lived in Paris, I learned an incredible amount about leadership specifically, but also about hospital operations. Because in a small place, you wear many, many hats. You have to get in and roll up your sleeves and do some of the kind of menial tasks that might be called for on any given day. We spent 3 years there, and then I went from there to a children's hospital. And so I think being open to that kind of opportunity, either in the job you're in or because it's a different job, is probably the best thing you can do to gain the richest amount of experience that will lead you to your next job. Careers do not have to be linear. Mine's as zigged and zagged, and it has paid off every time.
I love it. So being open, put on the mouse costume when the time calls for it, not for any board meetings or anything, right?
I mean, last year I was an aardvark. I went from mouse to aardvark. I don't know what I'll be this year for Halloween, though. I haven't thought through that yet.
Tell us about your family. As a mom myself who struggles to balance my job, how do you balance your big job with having a family?
Kristen, you might consider my answer a bit contrarian because I don't think I conform to this thought that there is actually even a thing called work-life balance. I was actually asked to give a talk on that quite a few years ago, and I think I probably disappointed a group of several hundred women in a conference room. But, you know, people want to be able to put their life into quadrants. They think about squares or rectangles and very precise things. I would encourage you to think about that concept of work-life balance much more of a amoeba that morphs and shapes, and it doesn't have any sharp edges or hard corners and hard sides, because I think that's actually how life happens. There are all sorts of priorities a person is called upon to think about in their life, their personal life, you know, their professional life, their personal life. If they have a family, it might be just a extended family or a support group of friends. There might be a spiritual side to your world, that all of those are demanding time and attention. And it is really solely on the individual to decide what balance is for them. That's the world according to Marcy Doderer. That's not probably published in any book because I haven't read a lot about that. But so, you know, I have the advantage. I have a true life blessing of an amazing partner in my husband. Mark. We've been married 33 years and we approached life as a partnership. And so at various points in time, we shared our roles, the home, traditional home roles differently. But I have spent more hours at work than I ever spent at home. There's no doubt about that. My ideal workday is 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. and I follow that most days of the week. I give myself a little grace on Friday afternoons. But at the same time, I was able to attend almost every gymnastics meet, swim meet. That was the one I wish I could have had work to avoid because swim meets are boring, but I went anyway. You know, piano recitals, harp recitals, orchestra events. And, you know, I made it work. And my husband is a huge part of that. Luckily for me, he loves to cook and he does that. And he doesn't mind grocery shopping and he does that. But it's not because he didn't do anything but stay at home. In the meantime, he got a master's degree and a PhD and was a postdoc in a cancer research center and then taught at the university level in Texas and in Arkansas. So, he didn't become that stay-at-home dad only. But there are sacrifices you make, and I think there are times you have to make a choice. There's no doubt. But it needs to be your choice, Kristen. It needs to be Marcy's choice. It shouldn't be dictated by some conforming view that social media puts out there for you. Like I said, I'm being very contrarian on
that's okay.
mic, on camera.
I think,
but that's my personal view.
This view needs to be pushed out so much that it is the new view, because I think we were raised to think, and you can do it all if you just do it right. If you find the balance and do it this way that they're telling us to on social media, everything will be perfect. But I much prefer the story of it's never going to be perfect. Find your own balance.
You know, I had a lot of conversations with my daughters. They knew what I did. And you know what? They're probably two of my largest cheerleaders for having achieved a CEO seat in a world where there aren't very many women. And they will tell you they're incredibly proud of their mom for what she did and that I was a very present mom. I think it's really important for me to instill in leaders that if you take on a leadership role, you actually have to take that seriously. And yes, family should come first. I do believe family comes first, but it also should not be at the expense of being an extraordinarily successful leader in whatever it is you're doing. And it is challenging for people, but those of us who choose to work in healthcare, particularly in the hospital environment, we knew on the front end, we were coming to work for an organization that's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And with that becomes, like particularly in senior leadership, I'm accountable for this place 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And that means I'm not off on the weekends. It means I'm not off on all the holidays. I have an incredible team. When I take vacation, they try to make sure I take vacation. But if big stuff hits the fan, you know, I was in Malta in June. And when we had an emergency flood here, I got called about it. We had events and I still needed to be present. And it's part of, I knew that going in. I knew that I would not work 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 and never have to connect when I got home. But I knew that going in and I wanted it. And I can't imagine not having that.
And you do very well at it. So 10 years of being available and being here for the kids of Arkansas, I think that's a...
But I'm pretty practiced about not doing heavy work at home.
Yeah.
I occasionally do email in the evenings, but not a lot of it. I actually don't think email is work. That's also probably a contrarian view. I think if you're just cleaning out your inbox, you choose to do that at 9 o'clock at home, that's on you. That's not on us.
I view email kind of like another social media site where I'm just like scrolling and, you know,
yeah.
Sorting.
Yeah, I agree.
You said you had two daughters. Tell me about your girls.
I have two extraordinary young adult daughters because they're growing up faster than I can imagine. My older daughter is Emily. She is a third year pediatric resident with the University of Tennessee at Le Bonheur Children's Hospital right now. She's married. Her husband is a psychiatry resident with the University of Tennessee. So two doctor family, deep in their training, ready to find their path, expecting their first baby. So excited. So I'm going to get to add a title
in
the coming months as
the best
grandmother
title,
of some sort. I don't have my name. Don't ask that question because I don't know what they're going
to
call
me. There are so many to choose from these days.
It won't be granny and it won't be grandma or meemaw. I've excluded some.
Write that down.
Katie, my younger daughter, is 25. She is a school teacher in Chicago. She has a master's in music education and is taking a new job with the coming school year. So she will be a 6th and 7th grade orchestra conductor and a 4th and 5th grade strings teacher.
So she's got the patience of a saint, I'm hearing.
Maybe. She is an artist to her core. My daughters could not be more different, which is what makes them wonderful. Emily is very driven, academic, hard charging. We tease Katie and say there's not an urgent bone in her body. She's literally, she can draw or paint almost anything. She's a musician. She picks up an instrument and she learns how to play it. So in her tiny little Chicago one-bedroom apartment, there's a keyboard, a violin, a full-size harp, and a guitar. And she wants more. There's probably a recorder in there, too.
Where does she get that musical talent? Did it come from you, your husband? No. Are you a singer? Do you play instruments?
I took piano for 9 years, but I wouldn't call myself a pianist. My mother is a pretty talented pianist. Nice. So it probably comes through that.
As a mom, tell us about your journey being in the healthcare system on the other side of the bed as a mom, not a CEO, not president. How's that?
It's a story I actually love to share with people because I think it has shaped me as a leader. My younger daughter, Katie, who's now 25, was born with an unusual and rare congenital genetic defect. She has what's called congenital central hypoventilation syndrome, CCHS. 12 or 1500 people in the world formally diagnosed with it. Like many genetic disorders, it has a host of symptoms that come with it. There's a spectrum of severity. Katie's particular situation is she's 24-hour dependent on some kind of mechanical ventilation. She's been trached since she was 4 weeks old. She has a cardiac pacemaker. We tease her. She's really, when she's supported by mechanical ventilation and a cardiac pacemaker, I'm like, you're kind of immortal because like technology is just going to keep all those organs going for you. But she's cognitively normal. So she attended school, she went to college, she went to graduate school. She's living independently, but it has certainly been a difficult journey many times. I quit counting after her probably 40th hospitalization somewhere back a long time ago. Her first 50 days were spent in a neonatal intensive care unit and then subsequent hospitalizations for illness and evaluation through the course of her world. So we did spend a lot of time on what I kind of coined was the parent side of the bed, whether that was in an ICU, a waiting room, a clinic room. And it's pretty powerful to be on that side and just be mom, which is a pet peeve of mine to be just called mom. I thought they know my name is Marcy. Call me Marcy. But to be called mom. I'm
writing that down.
I try to tell that to our staff. Like, if you know the parent's name, address them by their name or ask the parent, how would you like to be called? And so just assuming mom will fly because you know what? It may not be the mom.
Right.
But we watched process. We watched how things were communicated to us. We watched how people talked to Katie versus us or with Katie and us. We thought through how decisions needed to be made. We're talking about what support do you need when you're in an ICU for an extended period of time and what makes sense to our family and what can make sense to others. What are the physical things like? Have you ever tried to sleep in a sleep chair in a hospital room? They're terribly uncomfortable.
I haven't, but my husband has not stopped complaining about doing it when I had children. So I understand they're apparently very uncomfortable.
They're very uncomfortable. So there's all of those things that then have shaped my own leadership style. So I give thought to that if we're thinking about planning space. I give thought to that if we're thinking about restricting visitors. The whole process during the pandemic was challenging for me because the thought of only having one parent allowed at the bedside for a child during that course of 3 years, it's really painful to be the person who has to say that's the policy for now and it's got to stick because I knew those days when I was by the bedside because Mark was at work, or I had taken her. She was often treated at a hospital in Chicago. I'd gone to Chicago and Mark had not come. And being the sole parent, when you have a partner who could be there with you, it's frustrating and it's hard. So it certainly gives me very different perspective than probably the average hospital administrator. And things I think are different here because of my experience, for the better for families, because I can really empathize with those families because I've actually walked a mile in their shoe.
Sounds like our patient families are very lucky that you have that unique perspective and to be on their side and say, this is not okay, let's change it. That's probably why we're such an incredible system.
Well, I hope that it's felt to be a positive contributor for sure. When Katie was in high school here in Little Rock, she sat on our youth advisory committee and so brought a voice to the patient. Lately, one of my latest things to try to figure out is how do we really understand the voice of the patient at an even younger age? We have a teenager, you know, youth advisory council. I think the minimum age you can be on that is 15. That's arbitrary. That's our age cutoff because they can theoretically control themselves and contribute in a dialogue. But I think it'd be really interesting to figure out what does this six-year-old really think about spending a week in our ICU? What does an eight-year-old really think about walking the halls of a children's hospital? What scares them? What doesn't scare them? What's intriguing? And so I've challenged our patient experience team and our operations team to creatively think about how do we bring the voice of the child closer into our decision-making, not just the voice of the parent.
Right. I can't wait to hear those answers, honestly, from that aged child.
I think I want to run that focus group.
I would like to be there. Please invite me because it sounds fabulous.
And I bet they like Skittles.
They do. And they like stickers. So I'll bring stickers. You bring Skittles. We'll get them talking. How has the landscape of healthcare changed since you entered into this space?
Well, there's major macro forces in healthcare moving. Probably a game changer for every hospital was the Affordable Care Act. And regardless of people's political views, it's clearly here to stay because we're so far out. It was a big shift in our country trying to solve for uninsured populations. And that has been a positive thing for hospitals and providers alike, that people who didn't have ready access to employer-sponsored health insurance like we have as an employee at Arkansas Children's, that there was a way to go to the marketplace and purchase health insurance in a relatively affordable way for self or family so that they had that coverage for either catastrophic needs, as that was the coverage they wanted, or for, you know, full-on health insurance coverage. I am actually old enough to remember the implementation of HIPAA. Most people your age probably just assume there were always privacy laws. There were always health insurance portability rules. That is actually not true. That came around in the late 90s.
Wow. Late 90s, really? That short?
Yes. Don't hold me to it. I think the act was probably passed in like 1996, but the rules implemented closer to 98 or 99. I was actually living in Paris, Texas. I was the compliance officer for that little 100-bed hospital. And my boss looked at me and said, we actually need to understand HIPAA. Can you learn and make sure we're in compliance with HIPAA? And I was like, what's HIPAA?
Oh, my gosh.
So learned it.
That is wild.
So there's been some really powerful legislation that has been helpful and hinders. We are one of the most regulated industries in the country. And while HIPAA is very helpful to the individual, it can be an administrative burden to a hospital as well. There's been shifts in payment mechanisms that have been a bit of a whiplash. The whole industry thought we were moving fully to value-based payment, which meant we were going to really be paid to keep people well, not take care of sick people. That actually hasn't materialized in the way it was envisioned 10 years ago. Medical devices are changing how we deliver care every day. The technology is extraordinary that comes into play. So there's so many things happening at the macro level. On the micro level, there are challenges that I never thought we would experience in the deepest way like we are right now around the workforce. And though there were probably good early warning signs about what was happening to our workforce as a country in all sectors, not just healthcare, I'm not sure any business person really recognized those early warning signals. And in 2022, the labor market really fell apart for almost every industry, but in healthcare in particular. We saw a mass wave of retirements post-pandemic or mid to post-pandemic, people opting out of the workforce for many various reasons. You layer that with new immigration laws. I've never been in such a challenging place as to find employees of all types. And it's, we talk a lot about the nursing shortage because it's so acute and it's the reasons hospitals exist is to deliver nursing care. But we are struggling to find the right number of staff accountants, radiology, ultrasound techs, payroll clerks. You know, it's very challenging. And I didn't see that. I didn't see it coming either. You know, my crystal ball was not working at the moment. And so now trying to figure out how we accelerate a path to automation, to really getting rid of stupid stuff that people do every day so that they can be freed up to do the job we really need them to do. There's some really great success stories happening at Arkansas Children's to that end right now that will help us when there are fewer people to do the work. We want the people who are here doing the right work. So if you can automate something and take, this is a real example, we won't go into the details, but a new project came out of finance. We eliminated 1,600 man hours in our revenue piece around cost reporting that we can now let a machine do for us. So Cindy Hill's team can do the real work of data analytics, and they're not spending time being data manipulators. I mean, there's lots of opportunities to keep doing that to solve for a smaller workforce over time.
I'm a big fan of automation, and that is fascinating. So I would like to talk about that offline. That is super.
There's probably a whole story to be had there between what happened between IT and finance and the partnership that happened to leverage some business automation tools and take the work off the human and allow the human to go back to use their brain to think.
For the big stuff.
Yeah.
For the big important stuff that a robot can do.
And it's not about eliminating jobs. It's actually allowing the people who are working to do more work or do different work.
They take that mundane stuff off their plate.
Put it to the side.
So they can focus on their, I gotcha. So you did mention it's a struggle to get people in the healthcare system to work at post-pandemic. What would your advice be for those that are looking for a job in healthcare at any level? You know, from top to bottom, coming into the healthcare system.
Well, I think if you aren't yet working in healthcare and you want to, do your due diligence around the culture of the places you're going to work. As adults, we really do spend more time at work than we do at home if you're in full-time work. And you want to make sure you're going to like the culture. You're going to be in line with the core values of an institution, that you're going to like the mission and the vision of that institution. Those are all easy to find, particularly in healthcare. That stuff is so broadly published. Every hospital puts their mission statement out there and their core values. You can go deep on their websites and find, does that resonate with me or does it not? And then find some people who work there and talk to them. Ask them what it's like. You know, what's their everyday culture like? Do they have a friend at work? Do they have people that they eat lunch with? That kind of thing. Because you're going to want to find the place that'll be the right fit so that you're not job hopping. Because job hopping never looks good on a resume 10 years later. It may feel right in the moment, but if you look back in 10 years and you've worked in 5 or 6 places in 10 years, at some point that becomes a career limiting move for the most part. I think Arkansas Children's has tremendous things to offer people of all kinds of career trajectories. I believe our core values really do fundamentally tell you who we are as a person, as an organization, and the people who work here. And we are committed to making sure we live out those core values with each other every day. That's important to me. I grew up in leadership in a values-driven institution, and try to replicate that here because I think that speaks to the human side of all of us and not just makes us kind of robotrons when we come to work. And, you know, I think then be open to different kinds of jobs that you might not have thought were yours. Healthcare speaks a different language. And so our job titles might not always speak to what the job is. And so be curious, you know, discover what that means. Ask a lot of questions.
I don't think I ever really fully understood what a work culture was until I started here. And it is very much a great culture to be in. I think I talk to a lot of people, and almost every person I speak to has an Arkansas Children's story, something that ties them back here, whether it was a child or their parent worked here or their friend's kid was here. Almost everybody has an emotional pull to this system. And I think that's wonderful because it gives you a lot of really passionate people that
right. We talk about our why. What is your why? And I think any person should have that regardless of where they work. There is something about healthcare almost being a calling. People are drawn to this kind of institution. And I think it goes back to the first question you asked me, why healthcare? It's this incredible marriage of complex business, complex science, that can't be delivered well unless the heart's in the middle of that. And that there really are people at the core of everything we do. And I think that's what makes healthcare a really special place to work.
Yes. I've got one last question for you. It's my favorite to ask, and I'm super excited to ask you. What is your favorite part about your job? What do you love about it?
So much. I mean, I just love my job every day. Well, 99% of the days. I mean, there are some days that I'm not so excited about my job. But people, I'm a people person. And so when my day involves getting out of my office and seeing different people, even if it's still all meetings, but if they take place in different places in the hospital such that I get to walk around and see people, I love that because people will, something about me, people are willing to share the unvarnished truth with me. So I learned the good, the bad, and the ugly about Arkansas Children's pretty easily just by walking the halls. And you can put an exclamation point on it, though, when you have the opportunity to see a child in the moment. So yesterday, I was walking back through the South Wing. I was on the second floor at the registration desk, and a young couple was holding their little toddler. I would put her at 12 or 14 months, dressed in this adorable little pink dress. And the toddler wanted down, and the mom set her on the counter. And she toddled right over to the registration clerk, crawled in her desk, I mean, on her lap, put her arm around her, and wanted to do the work of the day.
Oh, my goodness.
And our team member, of course, welcomed the child, did a little bit, and said, can we go get you some artwork right now so I can finish my... Took her over, got the arts and crafts, handed the child back to mom, and was able to finish her work. And when you see that emotion, that's what we want our team members to do. Accept that child, be the child. But then, you know, redirect the child so that you can actually still do your work. And it was done with glorious smiles on everyone's faces. And that's what I like seeing every day.
Marcy, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on 10 years. We've been lucky to have you, and we appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. Let me tell a little bit about my story. You can see a little bit of it inside of me, and it's been an extraordinary 10 years. I'm really looking forward to our future. We got a lot more to do, though.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you guys for joining us, and we will see you next time.